here today. Really excited. We've got some great presentations ahead of us. Let's start with introductions. My name is Alicia Noel, and I spend most of my time researching and advising around how blockchain is being used in food and agricultural supply chains. I'm also the new vice chair for this group. Thank you, Nancy, and everyone else. Let's see. Nancy, would you like to introduce yourself next, and then we can go down the line?
Sure. My name is Nancy Mann. I'm the chair of the Social Impact Special Interest Group. My primary focus has been on the electric utility sector and applying blockchain solutions, especially as it drives higher penetration of clean energy resources onto the electric power grid. So really glad to have everyone joining us today for this call. Really looking forward to hearing about some of the innovations that are going on in this space and especially getting this more well known across the broader blockchain community.
Thank you. Yes. I know this, both of these projects are ones that I'm interested in learning more about. Adrienne, would you like to introduce yourself?
Sure. Thank you, Nancy, for the invite. My name is Adrienne, and I'm the founder of GST, and we are a global tech community. We first started in NYC in New York, and so now we've organized more than 100 plus events, tech events across the world, and Hyperledger was a partner for the last 2 years, right? So we collaborate in different initiatives to basically kickstart developer communities across the planet. So yeah, excited to be here with you guys.
Thank you. I'm just so you know, I'm looking at the way the participant list is showing up on my laptop. So Makoto, would you like to introduce yourself?
Yeah, sure. So I'm Makoto Takemiya. I'm the group CEO of Soramitsu. I'm also a co-founder. I'm a computer scientist by training. Related to the project Bakong, I did quite a lot of work with the central bank. And actually before COVID, I was traveling every month or so to Cambodia to work on the work with people on the project. And I do a lot of like kind of presentations and lots of different communications for the company.
Thank you. Next, Mark.
Yes, hi, Mark Liberati, the policy pillar, team lead at the United Nations Volunteer Program. I'm a former volunteer myself. Also volunteering in an ITU working group as vice team lead for competition, consumer protection, and dispute resolution in the Global Digital Currency Initiative. And actually had reviewed this Bakong project, which was, I think, a fascinating example on, especially on the consumer, competition and consumer protection thinking. So very keen to hear more about it and look forward. Thank you.
Great, over. Thank you. Next up, Sarah.
Hi, I'm also from Soramitsu. We'll be talking about Bakong today, me and Zelia and Makoto-san as well. So yeah, I've been working in Soramitsu for now more than 2 years now. And also I'm a maintainer of Hyperledger Aroha project.
Great. Thank you. Zelia, would you like to go next?
Yeah, hi. My name is Dila, and I'm a project manager in Soramitsu, and I've been working for more than 2.5 years there. And I worked as a project manager at Bakong, and I provided a lot of time in Cambodia. I had a lot of time in Cambodia. And
great, thank you. We're looking forward to hearing more about your work during the presentation later. Sean, are you able to?
Hello, everyone. Yep. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Perfect. Perfect. Sean Wilborn. I am located in Miami, Florida. Currently a student at the University of Miami. Interested in blockchain applications and the waste and recycling space. So dealing with materials management and supply chains. well. Yeah, looking forward to learning a little bit more about some of the initiatives going on, and glad to be here.
Great. Thank you so much. I think we've got a really good group here today. So looking at the agenda, it's the end of the year. It's December. Today is December 8th. Our next scheduled meeting is December 22nd. Being as the end of the year tends to get very busy for people, and we often don't see people attending, or we see a reduction in attendance, we'd like to propose that we cancel that meeting. Would everyone be okay with that?
Yep.
Great. Anyone opposed? We'll take silence as an okay. So our next meeting then will be January 5th, Tuesday, January 5th. We're now taking proposals for presentations for next year. We're already reaching out to a couple of companies, including people from Aveda and Estee Lauder, IFF and BSR about their new vanilla project where they're using blockchain to trace vanilla farming and the supply chains from Madagascar, and Ben and Jerry's. They did a carbon credit program back in 2018. So we're inviting them to come in and speak. Does anyone have other suggestions for future presentations? No. Okay.
Hi. I was going to say I'm working with it's a team, and it's called Young UN, sort of informal grouping in the UN system. And we had submitted, and we got sort of quasi third place endorsement, let's say, in this reimagining UN competition. And it's it would be great to like maybe get some. It's very initial stage, so I don't want to raise expectations, but it might be really helpful early next year to sort of get a little feedback and give a quick presentation on what we're thinking, where we're going with it.
Oh, that would be great. It would be great to learn more about that too. So let's talk later about when to put that on the calendar, but I've just made a note to follow up with you on that.
Yeah, it'd be the first quarter, let's say.
Okay, we can, we'll talk later on that about scheduling. Anyone else?
And Alicia, just one other one. So Bobby is right now in the process of connecting us with Amelia. She's doing a pilot demonstration on using blockchain as a form of registering votes. I think it's in Oregon, the project that they're working on. So we can also have them probably present in the first quarter of next year too.
Oh, that would be great. And that's very timely.
Yep.
Okay. Got both of those down. If anyone has any other suggestions, please feel free to add them to the community presentations page. We've got a section up at the top of the page for suggested presenters, and or reach out to me or Nancy or bring it up during the next meeting. Our blog post, we are working on the blog post for the December Hyperledger newsletter. We've already received a paragraph from Mark about the work that he's doing. Or sorry, not from Mark, from Sean. And looking to see if anyone has any additional content that you'd like to include.
So Mark, I don't know if this is of interest for you, but I know you've been doing extensive work on financial inclusion and quite a couple of things. And obviously even like the work that Saramitsu is doing and all those and highlighting some of those. Would you be interested in potentially writing a paragraph on the financial inclusion section?
Yeah, I would, could you share the link? Because sometimes I get a little lost in the wiki, but if you share the link, I will contribute.
Okay, sounds great.
Yeah. We'll get that. Okay. So going down presentations, Adrian, We are up at you. Do you have slides? As in, are you going to share a screen or?
Correct. Yeah, I just need permission to share a screen.
All right, sounds good. So, so Adrian, just a quick thing, like, since we would just want to be able to kind of get this webinar out, so I'll share my screen over to you, and if you can just, just try to, like, speak for about, like, 10 minutes or so, and then we want to have 5 minutes of questions, because I think there's going to be a lot of questions on the different work that you guys are working on.
Yeah, sure. No worries.
All right, let me pass this over to you.
Okay, cool. All right, so I'm sharing my screen now. Can you see my screen? Yes.
Yes. Yes.
Thank you.
Okay, perfect. Okay, thank you guys. Great to be here. As I mentioned, my name is Adrian, and just quickly, I already introduced myself, but I did not mention I'm a developer by background. I've been coding for around 16 years. And I've started like 5 companies. And so I've been in the startup tech world for over a decade now. So what I would like to talk to you about today is, well, talk to you a little bit about our community GST and basically how we are helping connect different projects, startups, and teams across the world, right? And for the purpose to build partnerships, right? And one key area and focus that we've been doing for our community is help teams, projects that have a focus on sustainable development goals. So tech for SDGs, and basically locating interesting projects that have tech solutions for the SDGs and basically create partnerships with key stakeholders around the world, right? So what I'll talk to you about in the next 10 minutes, a little bit about our community, the work we've been doing, and like to talk to you about the specific platform we're building to basically help these projects, initiatives connect with different partners across the world, right? So a little bit about our community. Our community is called GST. We first started in NYC in New York and in SF. We were not called at the time in 2014, we're not called GST, we're called LATAM Tech. So this is an event we had in SF in 2014. And then obviously throughout the years, we've done 100 plus events across the world, and we basically touched every single tech community that is basically every single emerging tech community across the world, right? So we've done events from Osaka to Tokyo to Phnom Penh, Hanoi, Seoul, some SF, Bangkok, Singapore, and so on, right? And obviously now we couldn't do any more events anywhere. So we started doing webinars, and now we've done 28 webinars, right? Touching on different ecosystems and basically keeping the work of linking up those ecosystems across the world, right? So our mission as a community really is, you know, think about technology, how can technology solve the most pressing problems, specifically in emerging ecosystems, right? So we've done pretty much events in all of East Asia, Southeast Asia, South Asia, Middle East, Latin America, and obviously North America, right? And increasingly so, now we're focusing a lot in Africa, right? So we've basically done several webinars now in Africa and basically connected with the community there and building bridges, right? So this is some of the events we did before COVID: Mexico, Guatemala, Chile, this is 2019, Hanoi, Manila, and India and Cochin, Dubai, and then some of the online other webinars we did on LATAM tech, Spanish tech, Central Asia, Africa, MENA, and Saudi region. And then we started doing lightning talks as well from our community. So we've been inviting people from our community and other communities to come and present for 2 or 3 minutes to present the projects that they're working on. And basically we give them feedback after that, right? So, and as I mentioned, one key focus of the projects that we've been helping out, scale out, it's tech for SDGs, right? And one key area, obviously supply chains have been a huge area of interest. Meaning we've connected with different partners who would definitely like to connect with solutions, blockchain related solutions that are hitting supply chain channels, right? So we've done 8 rounds of lightning talks, and each round we invite mentors to basically give feedback to those projects and further mentorship, right? So this is round 4, this is round 6, And after each round, we announce a winner, and we basically, they get further mentorship from the lineup of mentors of each round. So basically, overall, our community, we've done, and one thing that I forgot to mention is with Hyperledger, the way we partnered with Hyperledger for the last 2 years, since, you know, we were running events in all of many different communities. Like, say, we had events in Phnom Penh. We had like 3 events in Phnom Penh. So basically, where we're helping Hyperledger is we helped locate a chapter leader in, say, for example, in Phnom Penh, who will be interested in kickstarting Hyperledger events, right? So through that, we basically located many chapter leaders in Southeast Asia, East Asia, Middle East, and the Caucasus. Right now, I'm in Tbilisi, Georgia. I'm stuck here because of COVID. So we also located chapter leaders in Azerbaijan, in Saudi Arabia, with Saudi Arabia as well, and many different parts of the world, right? So yeah, through our communities, we've basically done all these events. And also in our community, we have around 1,600 speakers, meaning investors, heads of accelerators, heads of community development agencies, and so on, right? Because through all our events, we've amassed a pretty huge community, right? So the other very important thing that I would like to talk to you about, and this is where I think I would like to get basically, explore ways to collaborate, is on the platform, right? So the platform is really a key focus of ours, because this is the reason we're building this platform, is to create an automated way to connect solutions, right? Tech solutions with potential real problems, right? So through our community, we've been sourcing tons of tech solutions. Right now, we have sourced around 2,000 solutions, and this is blockchain and non-related blockchain solutions, but they are all tech solutions, right? So we have sourced around 2,000 solutions from all across the world. And what we do is, I'll explain you a little bit further how we basically matching, but what we're doing is we tagging all this data on the solution side. And basically on the other side, we source problems from development agencies, corporations, or companies who are looking, you know, who have an internal, what we call a problem statement. And we basically source that data, that information, and we put it into a repository to be able to match the two of them, right? So the way it works is we're literally building a marketplace. And this marketplace, we have the Mancha engine, right? So on the supply side, we're basically capturing solutions, sourcing as many solutions, interesting solutions as possible, right? And on the other side, we have problem statements, right? Which act as the demand side. So this comes from corporates, organizations, right? Who have a very specific problem to solve and or innovation challenge, right? For which they require a specific solution. So we match the two of them, right? The solution and the problem with the data that we capture. And very importantly, we are the third element in our engine, which are facilitators, right? So facilitators are mentors, investors, or heads of accelerators who can basically help orchestrate this match, right? So what I mean by orchestrating is once the match has occurred, we create a meeting out of the match, right? So for example, if some solution, blockchain supply chain solution targeted for vanilla, as you mentioned, match a specific problem from some organization in, I don't know, in Taiwan, we will ask a set of facilitators who are interested in supply chain, blockchain related supply chain solutions in East Asia to join this meeting, right? So we have a solution, we have a problem, and we will invite a facilitator to join this meeting with the purpose, right? With the purpose to facilitate a partnership, right? Either it's like a new distribution channel partner, a potential merger and acquisition. 3 could be for some form of integration, right? Integrating the technology into the organization and or investment as well, right? But investment, it's kind of a third kind of element. It's not on top of the list because investment is kind of a side effect. We're really, really focusing on, you know, filling those gaps with solutions because we've seen this problem throughout the world, as you know, throughout the years, that you know, we see incredible solutions in many parts of the world, but they really, really struggle on scaling up, right? Because we've seen in our industry, there's tech guys are great at building solutions, but have no idea, like really, really, they're really bad at building partnerships, right? And if a solution cannot be scaled up, it cannot create as much impact, right? And the same goes for solutions for SDGs, right? So, and one of the ways we're capturing this information is we have chatbots, right? And we created chatbots on Telegram for which we capture all this information, right? We capture solution information, we capture also problem information, right? So we have like solution providers, we partner with many startup organizations across the world, like Startup Amsterdam, Venture City, Creative Business Network, and they help us. Basically, we get the solution information into our database, and then also problem providers, for example, SAP Foundry, right? They have 7 foundries across the world, so we capture problems for them, and then we match the 2 of them. So I think I got 10 minutes. So what I'd like to invite you next, we would love to basically be part of our marketplace, either if you come as a facilitator, as an expert on blockchain solutions, supply chain, sustainable development, you know, blockchain for sustainable development goals. And we'd like to include you as facilitator, and or if you have a solution and or know of a partner who would have a set of solutions in the blockchain space for sustainable development goals, we would love to include them into a repository as well to start creating those matches. And lastly, also, we're looking to have more problem statements into our platform, right? So specific use cases that we can source to start matching those solutions through our community, right? So yeah, my time is up. So yeah, if you're interested, please give me your email and or LinkedIn on the chat, and basically I can follow up with you guys. And yeah, if you have any questions, happy to answer. Any comments, questions, happy to answer them. And yeah, that's about it. Thank you, guys.
Hey, Adrian, this is Nancy here. Thank you so much for your presentation on the great work that you guys are doing. Just one quick thing, like, so beginning of next year, we were talking to Alicia about this. We're in the process of reorganizing our SIG directory. And one of the things that we have in there are a repository of folks that are, you know, that participate within the SIG, but also are interested in doing more work within it. It could be useful to reach back out, and maybe we can reach out to you as well, and expanding your facilitator network and using that list to help you with populating different facilitators within the different industries.
Cool. Yep, that'll be perfect.
Awesome. Yes. So that sounds good. So we'll take that down as a note. Any other comments, Alicia? Do you have anything?
Certainly this sounds really interesting. I'd love to speak with Adrian later. I'm just going to connect over LinkedIn. When you were showing the slides on some of the organizations where you presented in the past, I saw that you presented with Mox and in Taipei and probably Shen, a few other and hacks. So it was nice to see some organizations that I already have a relationship there as part of the SOSV family.
Yeah, like SOSV was our global partner sponsor for like 2 years. So we helped China Accelerator and Mox connect with basically teams across Southeast Asia and South Asia, right? So yeah, basically SOSV, in a way, 2 years ago, helped us build our community. And so, yeah, obviously, yeah, that's why we've done tons of work in Asia as well, right?
That's great.
So here's my link. Yeah.
You've obviously worked with William Balbine. He's the one who brought me to Mox. Or he's the one who brought me into SOSV. So now I mentor for D-Lab and FoodX.
Okay, cool. Yeah, of course, yeah. William has been the main guy I talk to on the regular basis. But yeah, cool.
It's a small world sometimes.
Yeah, well, it's we all know each other, basically. Yeah.
It's great to see it getting a little smaller. Does anyone else have any other questions for Adrian right now? Or have any questions?
Just wanted to quickly, just, I mean, sort of in thinking around, you know, the functionality, I guess, on the AI chatbot, but also what exactly are you keeping on chain from this, the intake, you know, throughout the whole sort of supply chain of your matching system? Thank you.
On chain, like in the blockchain? So no, basically what we do is we're not using blockchain solution because we don't need to use the blockchain solution. We can use the centralized database just to basically gather all the data regarding blockchain solutions and sustainable development goals, right? So what we do is we tackle this data, and whenever we have a requirement or problem that matches blockchain solutions and or specific SDGs, so clean tech, you know, blockchain and clean tech and blockchains and or supply chain and blockchain. So basically we would locate, our matching engine will just basically filter out those solutions and then reach out to those teams. Well, first we have, like, for a big group of startups, we have a facilitator. So for example, we connected with New Zealand, Scale Up New Zealand. So they have a ecosystem of 1,800 companies. So with them, we, instead of reaching out directly to the startup, they act as a facilitator, and they basically make the introductions to specific solutions from that we locate from their database, right? So yeah, we don't need to use a blockchain at all because it's it will be an overhead. Meaning,
yeah, no, I see that. That's why I was curious. And then secondly, I guess just in following up, what would you see as a benefit towards maybe not a blockchain or DLT solution, but like in decentralizing this, so that you're validating those potential users, at least through a model of decentralization, if not, you know, utilizing blockchain or DLT. Thank you, Over.
Distributed ledgers and blockchain. So actually, I had this conversation a while with David in terms of if we could basically, because we were building a platform and see how we could use a blockchain technology, right? So we looked into centralized identity systems, which were basically the most interesting or basic one of the areas that we could potentially look at, because decentralized identity provide a way, you know, to, for individuals to sort of, and other peers to certify sort of skills and or profession and so on, right? Obviously we have LinkedIn, but, you know, the centralized identity provides a certificate, could potentially provide certificates, right? So issue like autonomous certificates for people. So we looked into, imagine that we could create sort of a peer-related certificates that are validated by our community, right? So we look into that. And I can't remember, it was specifically we looked into the centralized identity project from Hyperledger. But that was before COVID. After COVID, basically, we just really focused on helping the teams and those companies create partnerships, because that's one of the things, the gaps that we see in all communities, including Hyperledger. There's great projects, but those projects don't know specifically what problems. For example, a project in Colombia, you know, somebody has a cool project, blockchain related in Colombia, they don't necessarily know, you know, if this project could be deployed, implemented in Indonesia, right? So we could basically help bridge that gap between, you know, somebody who has a specific need for that solution and somebody who could provide the solution itself, right? So to answer your question, yeah, we looked into it, but we have not have seen a specific need right now to use a blockchain specifically for our project, right?
Thank you, Adrian. Yeah, I know I've certainly seen that there is a disconnect between organizations around the world where they, if they were working together, they'd be able to take advantage of their shared learning and not have to learn things the expensive way. And it would help everyone if they were able to communicate better and had more connections. I think it, so I want to be mindful of time. I know that we've got Swamitsu here and people are interested in them. So if there are no more questions for Adrian, let's go on to the Swamitsu team. Makoto-san, are you going to present or will the three of you be going on? I don't know if one of you is going to share screen.
I'm going to start, but we'll be, I'm sorry.
Yeah, go ahead.
So I was going to start and give a little bit of an overview to the project, but we'd need Zelia to share her screen.
Great.
Because the presentation's on her. Yeah, perfect. Awesome. So, yeah. Today, we'll talk about a central bank digital currency solution in Cambodia, which is called Bakong. I'll give just an overview, and Zelia and Makoto-san will be able to give more insight on the social impact of this project, because they worked very closely with the central bank in Cambodia. So yeah, let's start like the next slide, please. So Swamitsu is, do we have the Swamitsu page? Okay, so anyway, we were founded in 2016. We have more than 80 people around the world. So, like, we have offices in like 5 countries and people even in more countries because some of us like work remotely. So yeah, we work on different projects. We maintain Hyperledger Aroha. We created this Bakong solution with National Bank of Cambodia. We also like have digital depository with the National Depositories of Slovenia and Russia. We also worked on digital identity, and we also make some projects in the Polkadot ecosystem. So we do different stuff. And now let's go to the Bakong, which we gathered here to talk about. So Bakong is the world's first retail payment system run by a central bank, and it uses blockchain technology. It's a great and very like bold thing that Central Bank of Cambodia did. And right now, like thousands of users use like millions of dollars worth of assets in the system. So basically they can pay with Bakong, and they can also send money to other people. And at the same time, it's not only for clients, for customers and the retail, it's also connecting like commercial banks with the central bank, which helps a lot to maintain the whole system and to audit, to make the financial system of the country more like transparent in a way. So here are the applications. I think the next slide should be applications for like Bakong. It consists of like mobile applications, which are used by the retail, like basically the seller, like the store or whoever. And for users, they have this identity solution for onboarding. We won't cover that, but yeah, it includes the identity solution where a person can easily like send their documents. We can check for liveness of the person. It's very important, especially in rural areas. So, you know, to start the onboarding without actually like going to the bank, especially during the COVID, because, you know, you don't really want to risk anything. Then there is a desktop application for commercial banks to see and manage accounts of their own like users. There's also web client interface to monitor transactions, manage limits and create reports. And there are also like physical cards for secure transaction signing. Those are basically the parts of Bakong. You see they're like, it's not a very complicated system. It's rather straightforward. The mobile application is also very straightforward. So basically it has like mainly like 4 buttons, like display QR code that others can scan. Like if I want to send Zelia some money, I'll just ask her to show me the QR code. I'll scan it and we'll be able to send the money easily. Then it's possible to deposit the funds to an existing bank account, like just any average bank account. Then scan a QR code to send money to. It's like I said, with Zila or even with the retailer. So like I just scan the code and I send the money, like no cash, no anything. Or send money to a registered user using, I think it uses like phone number and it basically can just send it on distance without any QR code. So here is the next slide would be, no, we don't have the slide with the screenshots. Okay. Why Bakong? The reason.
Sorry, I guess with desktop, right?
No, it was the next one, the sixth one.
Ah, this one?
Yeah.
Okay, sorry.
So, okay, basically, a Bakong account is being created and then it's possible to make a payment. Like, that's how it will look. And you can also send the money by the phone number. And here it is. You can see the results. That's kind of easy and cool. So, yeah, the next slide, please. So, why Bakong was created? As I said, it was a very bold move from the central bank, but it was really important because only 22% of Cambodians older than 15 years old have bank account. What it means, like for us, like in developed countries or some developing countries, we can't exactly imagine ourselves without financial services like bank accounts. We all have online banking. We have our bank accounts in like big banks, and but it's not the case for Cambodians. They are very used to cash. They don't have those options of sending money, especially if they live in rural areas. But everyone has one smartphone, even more than that. So basically for each person, I think there's like 1.5 smartphones statistically in Cambodia. So everyone has their phones, but only 22% of adult Cambodians have bank accounts. And yeah, there's also a large remittance market. Domestic money transfers are common and very costly. Like in Europe, they have SEPA, and they don't have something similar in Cambodia. Also, like internet commerce is not very developed in there. So there are not many credit cards because there are not enough bank accounts. Like if you don't have a bank account, you don't have a credit card. So it's not possible to pay with a card and you have to carry cash all the time. And also, I think if Zila will be able to share some videos at the end, you will see why this might be uncomfortable sometimes. So yeah, next slide, please. Yeah, those are some news about Bakong. The development actually started, correct me if I'm wrong, in 2017. And the system was built on Hyperledger Iroha. And already last year were like pilot transactions that were accepted very, very nicely. But unfortunately, due to COVID situation in the world, it wasn't exactly possible to fully start using the system, but it happened this year. Next slide, please. This is from the pilot launch. What it basically means is like, if you see the sticker on the store, like Bakong sticker, it means that you'll be able to pay with Bakong in there. And with the fact that there are some limits that you can get even like without actual like onboarding, and the limits are good, you can start using Bakong without going to the bank to verify your identity or something. And now, yeah, please, the next slide. Yeah, and this year, finally, there was official launch of the Bakong system. It was covered in the media a lot, because it's indeed very important for the country. And as Zilia will tell a little bit later, it has a very, very big impact on the economy and on the lives of people living in Cambodia and on the currency, like Cambodian riel. Yeah, why blockchain? First of all, it simplifies payment architecture. By having this like core banking system, and other system on the same platform. Like there is this whole like core system that's running in the Central Bank of Cambodia, and it connects to the systems of banks. So it's not like directly users sending their money to the central bank, but it connects the banks as well. So like banks can transfer assets through the central bank seamlessly with the same platform. It increases efficiency. Also, when we talk about blockchain, it's always about trust. And yeah, it gives users mathematically provable property ownership. So it's safe, people can trust it. It's always possible sometimes to break something, but system on blockchain is much more resilient when it comes to like those big and important systems. So yeah, I think that now I'll ask Zila to take the mic and tell a little bit about economic impact in Cambodia. Zila, if you're talking, you're muted.
Oh, I guess it worked. Okay, I couldn't unmute me. Something happened with my... Okay. No, uh-huh. So for economic impact, there was some research and it is said that so annually it can be saved like over $360 million because of cost of handling cash and changing it to the digital currency. Also, the most like valuable impact is increasing Cambodian citizen with a bank account, because Bakong account it's very easy to create and anyone can create without any bank account, but then they can connect with bank and then to be connected already like with bank. Then increased transparency of financial transactions. So it's easy to monitor transactions, and as Sarah told, to increase trust in the banking system and reduce transactions cost. This is economy. Monetary policy. I guess here Makoto-san can tell more probably about monetary policy.
Well, yeah, I'll just say that the whole point of the system and the way it's designed is so that there won't be any effects on monetary policy, because it's really just a digitized form of cash. That being said, this also gives new opportunities to do targeted monetary policy and create new types of tools that haven't existed yet, because so much of retail payments could potentially be not only online, but with the transactional data that's accessible by the central bank in real time. That being said, I should also point out that the central bank isn't necessarily like wanting to, you know, surveil every person transacting on the system. There's no personal information that's held at the central bank. Everything is held by commercial banks. And so, but that being said, just doing things like a graph analysis of transactions could find key accounts, or could find interesting patterns in transactional data that could be correlated with different macroeconomic variables. As far as negative effects, which would be, disintermediating banks or different things like that. The system in Cambodia is designed so that there's no competition with bank deposits. So the system really is made to be a replacement for low value retail transactions. This thought was put into not competing with banks. In fact, as you probably saw, the system architecture is designed so that it's a two-tier system where the central bank runs the core ledger, and then commercial banks are providing services to each individual citizen so that they aren't being left out of the picture.
Okay, for social impact, I can tell words of Siri Chua. She is a director general at the National Bank of Cambodia, and she pointed out that they are not doing Bakong for the innovation, but their goal, real goal, is to add value to the society as a whole. And especially like for women in Cambodia, to achieve this goal, will mean for them to power of financial inclusion. So that these women who works hard, they can be sure that their money that they earned put into good use, that they can manage money very easy, like to transfer money in the for school, to pay for school, and they are sure that it's paid for school and not taken by other people. One of their goal is to allow migrant workers to send money back for free of charge and to not have difficulties with it. And actually, these goals can be seen from the videos that recently NBC created to marketize Bakong. It's really affects shows this goal that they want to achieve. Let me check whether I can.
Yeah, please share the fishy one.
Fish one.
I think you just need to when sharing the screen, there's this thing share with audio, thing that you can click flag down there. And while Zile is looking for the video, I again wanted to say that there is also Bakong created this project, Women of Bakong. So basically there are many women working on the project on a very high level. And that's another thing that actually inspires us a lot. At least it inspires me that, they try to make this sphere more inclusive and more diverse. And that's another thing that's bold that's the thing that I respect in this project, to bring more diversity into already very, very bold and daring project.
National Bank of Cambodia created several videos about Bakong, and this is one of them. I hope it will work, because usually videos don't work through Zoom, but let's see. Can you see it?
Yeah, but there's no sound yet. Maybe there wasn't sound, but I think it doesn't really matter if we have sound or not.
Because it's Cambodian. Here. Okay. It's Khmer.
I really, really like this video.
It's like using WeChat.
Yeah, probably, but it's in Cambodia and it's on blockchain, is like also cool.
Yeah, they also have videos like about transfer money when, I guess it's from real story, like when a daughter like is working hard and she's sending money like for paying for school, but instead like her relative used this money to drink alcohol, like et cetera. So she, and she, I guess I can, okay.
So this was a story that Her Excellency Madame Cheshire also talked about, that a lot of women will travel from Cambodia to work in, for example, in Malaysia, and then you know, they send money back home, and they don't really have control about where the money goes. Like, it can go to you know, any use, even to buy alcohol or something. So by having a system like this, these women can pay directly to the school or hospital or wherever they want to pay, so that it gives more control, especially to people who up until now haven't really had a lot of control over personal finances. So that's one of the objectives of the system, is to provide greater opportunities for financial inclusion, and especially for women who don't have these opportunities. So in Cambodia, very few people have bank accounts, but I think even fewer women have access to financial services. So it's much easier to expand financial inclusion using a backbone payment system that the central bank provides, because it's the central bank's duty to provide systems like this. And so it kind of allows like not just market forces, but also, you know, greater social good to be realized in a system like this.
That has tremendous possibility. I'm curious, I know that it was only officially launched this October, though the pilot started last year. How has adoption been so far?
We don't have all the specifics, and because of COVID, I haven't been able to travel to Cambodia since January, but as far as I've heard, there's a few tens of thousands of users, and mainly it's people in the capital. I'm not familiar with people using it in cross-border remittance yet, but I think there's several initiatives that are underway. I haven't heard of any problems. So I spoke on a panel actually today with at Singapore FinTech Festival, on a session hosted by the Cambodian FinTech Association. And one of the people on the panel was from a kind of a money transmitter that's a domestic, like microfinance money transmitter company. And he was saying very good things about the system and the potential for it. But I think that a lot of people haven't really yet realized the full potential. So it'll take some time, especially because the economy is not doing so well. So people are, I think, focusing on other things as well.
Mm-hmm. This looks like something that, as it grows, you can really leverage the success there to work with central banks in other countries, especially in that region, but also in other parts of the world.
Yeah, I think so too. We talked to a lot of other central banks. Central banks are very conservative, though, so it takes lots of time. Cambodia was really a special case because they had they had a team with a good technical knowledge and a very clear vision. And they actually started studying blockchain and using it for a system like this back in 2016. So they were quite ahead of many other central banks. And that's, I think, very, very interesting. But yeah, I think a lot of other countries are watching them. So if the system is a success, I think we can see similar systems in other countries.
Yeah. Do you know if they've done any outreach, especially focused on agricultural communities or fishing communities?
I haven't heard of anything like that. I do know that the central bank themselves kind of feels like it's not their duty to promote the system, but rather payment to service providers who use the system, for example, Ween or other microfinance companies. We've been talking to, a few different companies that are licensed financial institutions, and they're busy integrating the app into their own services right now. So I think we'll see some really interesting services here in the future.
That's great. Thank you.
Also, as far as I remember, there's like several like commercial banks. There are some like there are around 20, I think now, commercial banks in the system. And there's also a line of commercial banks waiting to be approved.
That's
a good question. It's around 20, 18 or 20, I think. I can actually show a demo if you're interested. I need to, it'll just take like, I know we're kind of over time. Do we have like 30 seconds or so?
I'd be interested if other people are up for it.
Yeah, absolutely.
I'm trying to get it set up here. Just a moment. I'm clicked on the wrong button. Okay. Let's see, how can I share my screen? Oh, it works. Okay. Can you see my screen? You should be able to see a phone.
I can see it.
Yeah.
Awesome. So this is the app, live app. Let's see. So I've got Khmer Real. I've got US dollar. So like we said, it supports both currencies. You can receive money like, Alipay or whatever with QR code. You can, scan with a QR pay. You can deposit if you do have a bank account. You can choose one of the partner banks. These are the partners. And you can just type in the account number if you know it. Or you can send. So I'll send some money. I just have some people registered. So I'll send... maybe 1 cent to Zia. So I hit send and then confirm, and it'll the money's on its way, and you can see it's actually already done. It's a success. So that's that's basically it. It's really fast and simple, and it seems to work pretty well.
Did Zilia have to approve receiving the funding?
Sorry, I missed what you said.
Did she have to approve receiving the funding, or
no? So yeah, you can just send money to anyone. The app itself is mainly for low value payments, so there's a transaction limit. It depends on your KYC tier. So if you're low tier, it's $250 a day. If you're high tier, it's $2,500 per day. And that's about it. So you can just actually send to anyone's phone number.
Got it.
If you wanted to. People can send me money too. I'm joking. But it's really simple. It's made for people, who don't have a lot of financial literacy. You also probably notice there's no transaction fee. So even sending 1 cent is fine. Like it doesn't cost anything to send.
If there's no transaction fee, is this, you said you're using a Polkadot, you're part of the Polkadot community. Are there gas fees, or is this on public Polkadot, or are they running a private version?
So just to be clear, so we do things with Polkadot, but this system uses Hyperledger Iroha, so it's a private permissioned system. And the architecture is such that the central bank runs the core blockchain nodes, the ledger. And that's why there's no fees, because there's no you know, need for gas, because it's a permission system. But you're correct that if we used a public system, there would have to be some just fees by nature. That's actually one of the reasons why Bitcoin hasn't really taken off for micropayments, despite that that's what people used to say was a good use case. Maybe 8 years ago, they used to say that. Not anymore, though.
Now, private, you said private. How many nodes are there right now?
It's a good question. I don't know the exact answer. I know the way that we designed the system was with 22 nodes. Mm-hmm. The central bank has, to my knowledge, different data centers. So the central bank runs all the nodes, but they're in geographically different areas. And you might think, why use blockchain when the central bank is going to just run everything anyway? the main reason really is kind of what you saw, that when I sent a transaction, it was signed on my device. Mm-hmm. So there's no central authority that is, holding all the keys and just transferring balances around. Instead, every transaction has to be signed in a massively distributed way. And this makes the system a little bit more robust from a security standpoint.
That makes sense. Thank you for explaining all of that. Do other people have questions? I don't want to monopolize their time.
Yeah, I thank you. I really have a few questions I would love to ask you. In dispute resolution, is there any embedded dispute resolution or any thoughts with embedded supervision from the central bank? You said it's sitting with the local banks. Also, the users can choose their banks, but can they quickly port their account to another bank and also port all of the data associated? Is there any public data lake or like an open banking aspect, or all the transaction data is being sit sort of in a way that would be useful to all parties intended? That was the majority of my questions. Thank you. Oh, and also just on the white label app, that was the design. And there, my understanding is the banks cannot change it, so that it's supposed to have a standard. It's sort of a standard technical specifications under the hood, and they can only sort of modify the user interface. Is that correct? Thank you.
Yes, a lot of questions. Sorry, I forget what the first one was actually.
I was just curious on so you have the fisherwoman and the person buying the fish. I mean, what if there's a, I don't know, the fish is rotten, it's flat, whatever. So just there's a dispute, right? Consumer dispute. Is there any way to log that dispute in the system? This would be similar to like your, Amazon dispute, eBay, Alibaba. So just thinking about any embedded disputes and or also embedded supervision from the, I mean, I see it's connected in the node, but what is the level of supervision going on in the transactions?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so it's kind of like a digital analog of cash. And so there's no built-in dispute resolution right now. It's basically the same as if you handed somebody some physical cash. So for low value transactions, I can't imagine anything being done. For high value, you could go to the traditional court system. That's typically not how things are done in Cambodia, but at least that would be an option. Unlike cash, you could actually prove payment here. So it is, potentially possible, but I can't imagine that being useful for low value transactions. For high value, yeah, maybe you can prove something. As far as being able to port your data from one account to another, you can't do that in the system. You can create another account, but with one phone number currently, you can only have one active account, so you'd have to deactivate one account and then you can create a new account. And I don't think you can send money to your account while it's deactivated, so it's kind of hard to move banks basically in the current system. But that, I think there's some work being done to make that easier for the future. And in fact, Central Bank of Cambodia has been studying open banking initiatives in other countries, especially Europe. And I think, you know, some concepts similar to what PSD2 has will be open in the future. What were the other two questions? I'm sorry, a little bit tired. It's been a long day.
No, sorry. I also just had read in your project document about the future for interoperability. So thinking about what potential has been explored or might be deployed for interoperability with other crypto assets potentially, and integrating this in a broader ecosystem. Thank you.
Yeah, that's actually banks to integrate or the APIs into really not every bank has a robust IT department. I'll just say that everything is standardized with respect to APIs and the messaging. So the ISO 20 or 22 messaging is used as standard. And so I think that if there's clear regulatory guidance, different services could integrate the transmitter bank directly, but I think in the future this will be more open, similar to what Europe has done with PSD2, and I think getting building a fintech culture and having fintechs that can directly connect would be, or even connect through a compelling for building a robust infrastructure.
Absolutely. And another really interesting thing was that this platform is built on the project Hyperledger Iroha. So I think, I've been tracing the project from the very beginning, and a couple of things that has stood out to me have been the high performance consensus and the low latency that the consensus mechanism, I think it's a custom one that you guys are using, as well as the fairly robust permissioning. Is there someone that we could reach out to get just a little bit more understanding of the project Iroha and explore potential other use cases also in applying Iroha for social impact? Because I think there's quite a few people that have talked about interest in using that platform for other use cases.
Yes, definitely. So I think Sarah, actually, who's on this call, is a really great person to potentially talk to about this. And then, of course, I'm happy to talk about it as well.
I can write down my Telegram alias or email address, but I think you know that one already. So.
Yep, sounds good. So I'll reach out to you and we can schedule another time. Love to have you guys join us again and talk about the project.
Thank you for having us.
Yeah, thank you so much.
Yeah, it's pretty cool. I didn't even know this group existed, actually. There's too many groups and things going on. So it's really great to know.
Absolutely. We're hoping to get more cross-section with some of the working groups and the broader Hyperledger community as well. So it's great to speak with you guys and learn about the projects that you guys are doing.
Yeah, thanks. I think this has been pretty interesting.
Awesome. Thank you so much. Any other questions or anything for the Suramitsu team before we end the call? All right, great. Thank you so much and have a great day.
Yeah, thanks. You too,
everybody. Bye-bye now.
Yeah, bye.
Bye.